Hi, this is Tolga Karayayda. In these lecture notes, we are going to learn about vector fields, gradient, divergence, curl operators, and also we are going to learn about conservative vector fields. Let's begin with the definition of a vector field. This will be the section 15.1 from the textbook. When we talk about the vector field, we can talk about the vector field in R2 or in R3. In R2, a vector field capital F is actually a function from a subset D of R2 to R2, and this can be written as capital F of xy equals P of xy times the vector I plus Q of xy times the vector j. In other words, it's the vector whose components are P of xy and Q of xy. So this capital F of xy is a vector which depends on the point xy chosen from the set D. As a result, the components of that vector are also functions of x and y, and these component functions are written as P of xy and Q of xy. And when we talk about the vector field capital F of xy in R2, we consider this vector capital F of xy as a vector whose initial point is the point xy in D. This way, we can draw a diagram such that at every point in D, where D is a subset of R2, we have an associated vector to that point. Namely, this is the vector capital F of xy. So that vector capital F changes from point to point in the domain D. And as we see in that diagram, we can show several of those vectors, capital F of xy, starting at a point xy in the domain D. So if you have a point AB in the domain D, you can draw a vector given by the vector capital F of AB. So the components of that capital F at AB are Q of AB and P of AB, the y and x components, and you sketch that vector such that its initial point is the point AB. An example of such a vector field could be, so when you look at the map of a region, let's say at a certain time, you have the direction and the velocity of the wind blowing in that region, and the velocity of the wind blowing at every point will give you a vector field. Of course, this vector field will change as time changes, but at a certain instance of time, the velocity of the wind is an example of a vector field. And similarly, a vector field in three dimensions is denoted as capital F of xyz. This will be a vector which will depend on xyz, so the components also are functions of xyz, and capital F of xyz is given as P of xyz times the vector I plus Q of xyz times the vector j plus R of xyz times the vector k. In other words, that's the vector whose components are P of xyz, Q of xyz, and R of xyz. Again, such a vector field in R3 is also given as a function from a subset D of R3 to R3. Here that domain D is called the domain of the vector field, and P of xyz, Q of xyz, and R of xyz are component functions of that vector field. And well, in that course, we are going to mostly consider vector fields such that the component functions are functions which have continuous first-order partial derivatives. So the component functions will be considered as differentiable functions. Now, if we move on to the next page, we are going to be talking about the gradient, the divergence, and the curl operators performed on vector fields. This is actually section 16.1 from the textbook. First of all, when we look at the gradient of a function f, we have defined gradient of a function f before when we were dealing with directional derivatives. And gradient of a function f of xy, a function of two variables, is the vector whose components are the partial derivatives f sub x at xy and f sub y at xy. So when we write it in this form, we see that the gradient of f is a vector which depends on the two variables x and y. That's why we can consider it as a vector field. The components of that vector field, gradient of f, are f sub x and f sub y, the first order partials of the function f. And for a function of three variables, again, we can define its gradient. Gradient of f at x, y, z this time is the vector whose components are f sub x, f sub y, and f sub z at x, y, z. Again, this is a vector field because the value of the gradient of f depends on x, y, z. And the component functions are, again, the first order partials of f with respect to x, y, and z, the three variables. For a function f, the gradient of f is a vector field, and in this notation, in the gradient of f notation, we see the upside-down triangle. The name of that symbol is the nabla, and we can consider nabla as a differential vector operator whose components are del over del x, del over del y, and del over del z. Now we apply this nabla operator to f, it will return the vector whose components are del over del x of f, comma, del over del y of f, comma, del over del z of f. And besides the gradient operator, which is performed on functions to get a vector field, we can talk about the divergence of a vector field. If we have a vector field f of xy given by the component functions p of xy and q of xy, a vector field in R2, divergence of f, du f or nabla dot f is the function given by the formula divergence of f at xy equals p sub x at xy plus q sub y at xy. Notation-wise, if we write this as nabla dot capital F, we have the vector operator del over del x comma del over del y dot the vector field p comma q. If we pretend as if we are taking the dot product of two vectors, del over del x times f will just mean del over del x of p, which is p sub x, and del over del y times q will correspond to del q over del y. And in the dot product, we are taking the sum of these products, so notation-wise, nabla dot f just corresponds to this formula, del p over del x plus del q over del y, which is our formula for the divergence. And similarly, for a vector field capital F of xyz with components p of xyz, q of xyz, and r of xyz, the divergence is given by the formula divergence of f, which is nabla dot f, is p sub x plus q sub y plus r sub z. So this is, actually there is a mistake in the lecture notes here. The formula should be p sub x plus q sub y plus r sub z. I have written it incorrectly, please make the correction. Notation-wise, when we take the dot product of the operator del over del x, del over del y, del over del z with p, q, r, we obtain del p over del x plus del q over del y plus del r over del z. That's the correct formula. The second formula I have written down here is the correct one. In short, for a vector field, its divergence is just a function of two or three variables. And the third operation we want to consider related to vector fields is the curl operator. The curl can be applied to a vector field f in R3, not in R2. For capital F of xyz, a vector field with component functions p of xyz, comma q of xyz, comma r of xyz, the curl of f is defined as curl of f equals nabla cross f, which has the component functions r sub y minus q sub z, comma minus r sub x plus p sub z, comma q sub x minus p sub y. Now, that's a formula which is not easy to keep in mind, but using the notation nabla cross capital F, and you take the cross product of the operator vector del over del x, del over del y, del over del z with p, q, r, and you write this as a 3 by 3 determinant with I, j, k in the first row, del over del x, del over del y, del over del z in the second row, and p, q, r in the last row, after extending the 3 by 3 determinants along the first row, pretending as if you are taking a cross product by that determinant formula, you are going to arrive at exactly the same formula as written above. So this is an easier way of remembering what the curl of a vector field is. For a vector field capital F in R3, curl of F is again a vector field in R3. Okay, up to now we have talked about the gradient of a function as a vector field, the divergence of a vector field as a function, and the curl of a vector field in R3 as a vector field again in R3. These are quite important operations performed on functions or vector fields, and they appear in several important theorems of vector calculus. For example, the gradient of a function will play an important role in conservative vector fields and path-independent line integrals, which we'll see later in this course. And also we have seen that gradient also appears in the formula, the dot product formula for directional derivatives and the function f has continuous first order partials, as you may remember. And when we look at the divergence of a vector field, the divergence of a vector field appears in the divergence theorem, which gives a relation between a surface integral on a boundary surface and the triple integral on the enclosed three-dimensional region in R3. But this divergence theorem will not be in the content of our course. And similarly, the curl of a vector field appears in another important theorem called Stokes' theorem, which gives a relation between the line integral of a vector field on a boundary curve and a surface integral on the surface whose boundary is that curve. And actually the two-dimensional version of Stokes' theorem is the Green's theorem, which we'll learn in as the last subject of this course. And in that Green's theorem, the curl operator appears in a hidden way in a relation between the line integral of a vector field along a simple closed curve in two dimensions and a double integral of a function on the enclosed region. And that function which we are integrating as a double integral will be the third component of the cross product of the vector field whose line integral is taken. So actually when you consider a vector field in two dimensions as a vector field in three dimensions such that the third component is zero, its curl, the third component of the curl will be nothing but what we see in the formula of Green's theorem. Okay, after defining these important operations on functions or vector fields, let's move on to our next subject, which is section 15.2 from the textbook, which is conservative vector fields. Okay, when we have a vector field capital F, no matter whether it's in two or three dimensional space, it's called a conservative vector field on a domain D if there exists a function lowercase f defined on D such that capital F as a vector field equals the gradient of lowercase f on D. For a vector field capital F of xy given by P of xy comma Q of xy, saying that that vector field capital F of xy is conservative on a subset D of R2 is the same as saying that capital F of xyz is equal to gradient of F of xy, sorry, capital F of xy equals gradient of f at xy for all xy in D for some function f of xy defined on D. In other words, p of xy comma q of xy as a vector will be equal to lowercase f sub x at xy comma lowercase f sub y at xy for all xy in that domain D. And similarly, for a vector field capital F of xyz with component functions P of xyz, Q of xyz, and R of xyz, to say that that vector field capital of capital F of xyz is conservative on D as a subset of R3 is the same as saying that capital F of xyz is gradient of F at xyz for all xyz in D for some function lowercase f of xyz defined on that domain D. In other words, this is equivalent to saying that the vector with components p, q, r is the same as the vector with components f sub x, f sub y, f sub z on the domain D. And this is also equivalent to saying that the function p of xyz is the same as f sub x at xyz, q of xyz equals lowercase f sub y at xyz, and the third component r of xyz equals lowercase f sub z at xyz. And for a conservative vector field capital F, if capital F equals the gradient of the lowercase f function, then this lowercase f function is called a potential function for that conservative vector field capital F on the given domain D. So potential function is the function such that your vector field is the gradient of that function. If you look at an example in the next page, we are given a vector field capital F of xy equals x over x squared plus y squared comma y over x squared plus y squared plus 1. We want to show that this is a conservative vector field on R2 minus origin. Note that the given vector field is not even defined at origin, so its domain is R2 minus origin. Let's call that the domain D. So we want to show that the given vector field is conservative on the given domain D, which is R2 minus origin. To say that a vector field is conservative is the same as saying that we can find a function lowercase f such that the vector field capital F is the gradient of that lowercase f function. So we are going to solve the problem by showing the existence of such a function lowercase f such that capital F as a vector field is the gradient of that lowercase f function on the domain D, which is R2 minus origin. So to say that capital F is a gradient of lowercase f is the same as the vector field x over x squared plus y squared comma y over x squared plus y squared plus 1 equals lowercase f sub x comma lowercase f sub y on R2 minus origin. This gives us two equations. The first order partial derivative lowercase f sub x at xy equals x over x squared plus y squared, and the second equation is lowercase f sub y at xy equals y over x squared plus y squared plus 1. So when we look at the first equation, if the partial derivative f sub x is equal to x over x squared plus y squared, then I can find lowercase f of xy as the integral of this x over x squared plus y squared with respect to the variable x. And by treating y as a constant and performing the integration, we obtain the function 1 over 2 ln absolute value of x squared plus y squared plus a constant. But here, since we have considered y as a constant when integrating with respect to x, the arbitrary constant at the end of this indefinite integral should be written as a function of y. So we have at the end plus c of y, where c of y is a function of y. The reason is, again, since we are integrating with respect to x and y is treated as a constant throughout this integration, the plus constant at the end of the indefinite integral should be written as a function of y now. As a result, the solution of the first equation, f sub x equals x over x squared plus y squared, is any function lowercase f of xy in the form 1 over 2 ln absolute value of x squared plus y squared plus c of y for an arbitrary function c of the variable y. But we also want the second equation to be satisfied. When we look at the second equation, it tells us that f sub y of xy equals y over x squared plus y squared plus 1. But we already have the information from the first equation that lowercase f is 1 over 2 ln x squared plus y squared plus c of y. And the second equation just tells us that the derivative of this function with respect to y must be y over x squared plus y squared plus 1. So then we take the derivative of 1 over 2 ln x squared plus y squared plus c of y with respect to y. We obtain 1 over 2 times 1 over x squared plus y squared times 2y plus c prime y. Note that c was just a function of y, then the derivative of c of y with respect to y is nothing but c prime y. And equating this to y over x squared plus y squared plus 1 and cancelling the y over x squared plus y squared terms from each side of the equation, we arrive at c prime y equals 1. So in order for the second equation to be satisfied, the arbitrary constant c of y as a function of y, which we obtained after the solution of the first equation, the c of y must satisfy the equality c prime y equals 1. So by just integrating 1 with respect to y as a function of one variable now, this c of y must be a function of the form y plus e, where e is an arbitrary constant now. Note that c was just a function of y, and we obtain c prime y is 1. When we integrate with respect to y here, there is no x variable involved here. That's why the arbitrary constant at the end is just a constant. We don't write it now as a function of x because we are done with x. C of y is just a function of y. There is no x variable involved there. At the end of the integration with respect to y, the constant is an actual constant, not a function of x now. As a result, we have seen that the two equations f sub x equals the first component and f sub y equals the second component of the vector field f is satisfied for the function lowercase f of xy equals 1 over 2 ln of x squared plus y squared plus y plus a constant e. For any arbitrary constant e, such a function f will be a potential function for the capital F vector field on R2 minus origin. As a result, the given vector field is conservative on R2 minus origin, and any potential function lowercase f is given by that formula, 1 over 2 ln x squared plus y squared plus y plus an arbitrary constant e. Note that when we were solving the second equation, we had arrived at the equation c prime y equals 1. Here, in that stage of the solution, if we had something like c prime y equals an expression which includes x in it, then we would say that this is a contradiction because c is just a function of y and c prime y can only depend on y. If we had arrived at something like c prime y equals a function which involves x in it, then we would say that there is no solution, there is no such function c of y, hence there is no such potential function f of xy. But we didn't have any such situation in our solution, and we had shown that there is a solution function f of xy. Hence, we concluded that this vector field capital F is a conservative vector field. We did it by finding a potential function. We did it by showing that there is a potential function by solving the two differential equations, lowercase f sub x equals a function, which is the first component of the vector field, and lowercase f sub y equals the second component of that vector field. Okay, now there are some other results which we can use to test whether a given vector field is conservative or not. The next page states a theorem related to this concept. So in the theorem, in the next page, we have two parts for this theorem related to vector fields in R2 or in R3. In the first part, for a vector field capital F of xy equals P of xy comma Q of xy as a vector field in R2, if you know that the component functions P and Q have continuous first order partial derivatives on the domain D as a subset of R2, then if the vector field f is conservative on D, this implies that q sub x of xy equals p sub y of xy for all xy in D. So this is only one direction. if you know that capital F is conservative, then this implies that Q sub x must be equal to P sub y for all xy in the domain D where capital F is conservative on. In the second part, we have a similar situation. We are given a vector field capital F of xyz with components P of xyz, comma Q of xyz, comma R of xyz, such that the component functions P, Q, and R have continuous first-order partial derivatives on a domain D as a subset of R3. Now, the conclusion is, if we know that capital F is a conservative vector field on that domain D, then we have the three equalities: Q sub X equals P sub Y, Q sub Z equals R sub Y, and R sub X equals P sub Z on the domain D. Actually, we can state these three equalities in a short way by simply saying that the curl of the vector field is equal to the zero vector on D. Okay, so this theorem tells us that for conservative vector fields, the component functions should satisfy certain equalities related to their partial derivatives with respect to x, y, or z. Now, how can we prove that theorem? We are going to look at the proof of the second part. The proof of the first part is very similar to this. So let's say that our vector field F is conservative. So it means that the vector field capital F equals the gradient of a lowercase f function on D as a subset of R2. As a result, we have P, Q, R equals F sub X, F sub Y, F sub Z. In other words, P is F sub X, Q is F sub Y, and R is F sub Z on D. Now, in the statement of the theorem, we are assuming that the first order partials of P, Q, and R are continuous functions. But when we look at first order partials of P, which is F sub X, or Q, which is F sub Y, or R, which is F sub Z, these are going to be nothing but F sub XX, F sub XY, F sub XZ, which are partials of P, for example. These correspond to actually second order partials of the lowercase f function. So if the first order partials of P, Q, and R are continuous, it will mean that the second order partials of lowercase f are continuous functions. You know that when a function of three variables has continuous second order partial derivatives, then the mixed partial derivatives are equal to each other. As a result, when we look at Q sub X, this will be F sub Y sub X. This is F sub YX. But by the equality of mixed partials, it will be nothing but F sub XY. But F sub XY is F sub X sub Y, which means P sub Y, because F sub X is P. And this tells us that Q sub X must be equal to P sub Y under the assumption that capital F is conservative and the consequences we have stated above. Similarly, we can see that Q sub Z is now F sub YZ, which equals the mixed partial F sub ZY, which is nothing but R sub Y, which gives us the equality Q sub Z equals R sub Y. And similarly, we have R sub X is F sub ZX, which equals F sub XZ, which is nothing but P sub Z. As a result, we obtain that R sub X is P sub Z. And to make the connection with the curl, when we write down the curl of F, this is the vector field with components R sub Y minus Q sub Z, comma P sub Z minus R sub X, comma Q sub X minus P sub Y. And using the equalities of these expressions to each other, this vector is nothing but 0, 0, 0, which is the zero vector field in R3 or on the domain D. This tells us that when these three equalities hold, the curl of the vector field will be just a zero vector. So when the conditions are satisfied, when F is conservative and the component functions have continuous first order partials, its curl should be the zero vector field. Okay, as an application of this theorem, let's look at the example in the next page. So we are given here a vector field capital F of xyz, whose components are 2xy, comma, x squared plus 2yz plus 1, comma, y squared plus x. And we want to show that this vector field capital F is not conservative on any domain D as a subset of R3. Okay, for the solution, so when we write this capital F as PQR, where P is the first component, which is 2xy, Q is the second component, which is y squared plus 2yz plus 1, and R is the third component, y squared plus x of that vector field, we know from the previous theorem that if this is conservative on any domain D, then P, Q, and R must satisfy the equalities stated in the theorem. So since they have continuous first order partials, the previous theorem tells us that we should have these equalities, which are namely Q sub x equals P sub y, R sub y equals Q sub z, and the other one is R sub x equals P sub z. So we check whether these equalities are satisfied or not. So when we simply calculate Q sub x, we see that it's 2x, and this is also equal to P sub y. So the first equation, Q sub x equals P sub y, is satisfied. Now we check the second equation, R sub y. When we calculate this, we find 2y, and this is also equal to Q sub z. So R sub y equals Q sub z is also satisfied. But when we check the third equation, when we look at R sub x, this is 1, but P sub z is 0, and 1 is never equal to 0. No matter what the domain D is, R sub x is not equal to P sub z on D. As a result, this third equation is not satisfied. As a result, this capital F cannot be conservative on D, because if it were conservative, then all of these three equations would be satisfied. A second way of solution for this problem is the following. So let's assume that capital F is conservative and it equals gradient of F. This would mean that P is F sub X, Q is F sub Y, and R is F sub Z. So if P is F sub X, which is the first component, 2xy, then we can find f of xyz by integrating p with respect to x. So f of xyz would be the integral of 2xy with respect to x. Here capital F is a function of three variables, x, y, and z. Then we integrate with respect to x. The arbitrary constant at the end of the integration should be taken as a function of y and z, which were the variables treated as constant in that integration. As a result, from the first equation, f sub x is 2xy, we obtain that f of xyz must be written in the form x squared plus y plus a function c of yz. Then, using that expression for f, its derivative with respect to y, which is the derivative of x squared y plus c of yz, should be equal to q, which is x squared plus 2yz plus 1. Then we take the derivative of this x squared y plus c of yz with respect to y, we find x squared plus c sub y yz, and this must be equal to x squared plus 2yz plus 1, and we see that this implies after cancellations that c sub y yz is equal to 2yz plus 1. Then, note that here c is just a function of y and z, and we know c sub y equals 2yz plus 1. Then, by integrating 2yz plus 1 with respect to y, we are going to find c of yz. In that calculation, there is no x variable involved, and there is only y and z, and we treat z as a constant. So when we integrate 2yz plus 1 with respect to y, the entire derivative is y squared z plus y. But there'll be an arbitrary constant at the end of this indefinite integration. Since z was treated as constant and there is no x involved in that calculation, the arbitrary constant at the end here is written as e of z. an arbitrary function e of z. Up to now, we only used the two equations, f sub x equals p and f sub y equals q. If you look at the third equality, which gives us f sub z, now up to now, we have obtained that f of x, y, z is x squared y plus c of y z. And we know that c of y, z is y squared z plus y plus e of z, which tells us that f of x, y, z is x squared y plus y squared z plus y plus e of z. And the third equation tells us that f sub z is equal to r. So when we take the derivative of this f with respect to z, we should find r of x, y, z, which is nothing but y squared plus x. But the derivative of f with respect to z is the derivative of x squared y plus y squared z plus y plus e of z with respect to z. This will give us 0 plus y squared plus 0 plus e prime z. And we want this to equal y squared plus x. And this tells us that after cancellations, e prime z must be equal to x. Now, e was just a function of z. As a result, e prime z should be only a function of z. But here we arrive at e prime z equals x. This is a contradiction because e prime z cannot depend on x. And as a result of this contradiction, our assumption in the beginning that capital F was a conservative vector field is wrong. So we arrive at the conclusion that this capital F cannot be a conservative vector field. There cannot be any potential function F like this. So this was a second way of solution. So you can start with the system of equations f sub x equals p, f sub y equals q, f sub z equals r for a potential function lowercase f. If you can show that there is no such lowercase f function, this will mean that your vector field cannot be conservative. Now, the previous theorem stated that when a vector field was conservative, then the component functions should satisfy certain equations related to their partial derivatives. Now, the next theorem in the next page gives us an if and only if statement when we have an extra condition on the domain D. So let's read the theorem. In the first part, let f of xy equals p of xy, q of xy, where p and q have continuous first order partial derivatives on D as a subset of R2, and there is an extra condition here which says that D is simply connected. So this part is important. Besides assuming that P and Q have continuous first order partial derivatives on D, the domain D is also assumed to be a simply connected domain. I'm going to explain what this means after this theorem. Under these assumptions, we have that F is conservative on D if and only if Q sub X is P sub Y on D. Now, this condition is if and only if when we impose the extra condition on D that simply D is simply connected. The second part of the theorem is similar. We have a vector field capital F of XYZ in three dimensions with component functions P of XYZ, Q of XYZ, R of XYZ. And here we assume that P, Q, and R have continuous first-order partial derivatives on a domain D as a subset of R3, and we also assume that D is simply connected. Then, under these assumptions, we can say that F is conservative on D if and only if the three equalities Q sub x equals P sub y, Q sub z equals r sub y, and p sub z equals r sub x are satisfied on D. So without assuming that D is simply connected, in the previous theorem we just had when f is conservative, these equations should be satisfied. Now, by the extra condition that D is a simply connected domain, the relation between f being conservative and those equations being satisfied becomes an if and only if statement. So they are equivalent statements to each other. So when f is conservative, the equations are satisfied, and if you know that the equations are satisfied, then f is conservative on D if D is a simply connected domain. The proof of this theorem is omitted. The proof for part 1 in 2 dimensions will use Green's theorem, and the proof of part 2 in 3 dimensions will use Stokes' theorem. But we omit these proofs. But you may ask now, what does simply connected mean? I should explain this to you. Okay, now, a subset D of R2 or R3 is called simply connected if every closed curve C in D can be shrunk to a point in D by continuously deforming the curve C by always staying in the given region D. When we are continuously deforming that curve C, actually, in that continuously deforming operation, we are not allowed to cut and paste the curve C, but it is allowed for the curve C to cross itself. Okay, what does that definition really tell us? So we want to say that no matter which closed curve we take in the domain D, we want to be able to shrink the curve C to a point by continuously deforming the curve C, such that in that operation we always stay inside D. So this is actually a topological concept. If we give some examples, in two dimensions, the whole space R2, or for example the first quadrant, not the octant here, I should say the first quadrant in the two-dimensional space, these are examples of simply connected domains. But if we have a region which has a hole in it, like R2 minus origin, or a region which has a hole in it, this is not simply connected. For example, in R2 minus origin, if you take a curve which winds around the origin, if you try to shrink that curve to a point by continuously deforming it, you cannot do it without passing through the origin. You want to deform it, you want to shrink it to a point in R2 minus origin, but without the curve passing through the origin, you cannot do that. It's the same when you have a hole in your region. If you take a curve which goes around the hole, without passing through that hole, the curve cannot be continuously deformed so that it shrinks to a point at the end. But in R3, it's a bit more complicated. In three-dimensional space, R3 itself and R3 minus origin is simply connected. Here, when we exclude origin, we form a hole in the three-dimensional space. But when you take a curve, a closed curve in R3 minus origin, you can take it away from the origin by moving it without passing through the origin, and at a location which is far from the origin, you can just shrink it to a point without passing through the origin. But when we exclude the z-axis from the three-dimensional space, R3 minus z, this is not simply connected. In the picture here, we show a closed curve which goes around the z-axis. So the curve C shown in the picture winds around the z-axis. And if we try to continuously deform the curve C so that at the end it shrinks to a point in R3 minus z-axis, without this curve passing through the z-axis, there is no way to shrink it to a point in R3 minus z-axis. And we want to always stay in the domain D, which is R3 minus z-axis. So without going outside that region, we cannot continuously shrink this curve to a point. That's why this simple closed curve, this closed curve C, cannot be shrunk to a point in D by always staying in D. As a result, R3 minus z-axis is not simply connected. Okay, so in those examples, I just tried to explain what being simply connected means. And when you know that your domain is simply connected, the theorem tells you that if Q sub x equals P sub y for a vector field in two dimensions, and if D is a simply connected region in R2, then your vector field is conservative. And in three dimensions, if your domain D is simply connected and the three equations, q sub x equals p sub y, q sub z equals p sub y, and sorry, q sub z equals r sub y, and p sub z equals r sub x, if all of these three equations hold on the simply connected domain D, and p, q, and r have continuous first order partials on D, then this will imply that F is a conservative vector field.